Have you ever heard the song Lean on Me by Bill Withers? Anybody here ever heard that song before? Anybody here not heard the song? Okay, it's an old song, goes back many years, but it's a very uplifting song, and its lyrics talk to us, to all of us, as it describes our need for help from others. And it goes like this, and I promise you I'm not going to sing it for you. Sometimes in our lives we all have pain. We all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm going to need somebody to lean on. So swallow your pride if I have things you need to borrow, for no one can fill those of your needs that you won't let show. So just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. If there is a load you have to bear that you can't carry, I'm right up the road. I'll share your load if you just call me. You know, at some point, all of us feel lost and lonely, hopeless and alone with no friends who truly know and understand us. Now, it may have been long ago, or it may have been last week, but we have all been there. Worldly people often try to fill that emptiness by turning to the pleasures of this world, but it only masks the emptiness and pain. As Christians, where do we go to deal with those feelings? To whom can we turn when we need a friend to lean on? On one hand, we have our fellow saints, other Christians, and we should turn to one another for help when comfort is needed. But where can we turn in those times when brethren are not there, or even worse, are there and let us down? Where do we turn? Well, this evening we're going to answer that question as we draw near to the end of our study of 1 Peter. Aware of the trial coming on God's people, Peter ends his book with encouraging words in verses 5 through 11 about a caring God. About a caring God based on the words of verse 7. Specifically, verse 7, he says, casting all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. This is a passage here in 1 Peter 5, verse 7, that we should memorize. This is a passage that should be on our minds that we could constantly turn back to and think of when we feel that loneliness, feel like we're struggling with life. We can know that God cares for us, that we serve a caring God. And as we look at that, as we work our way through the text tonight, we're going to see three things, three very simple things, and that is that God calls us to Himself as the caring God, as the one and only caring God, through complete humility, through confident trust, and to consummate glory. Those are the three things that we'll see in our study tonight from 1 Peter 5, verses 5 to 11. The caring God who calls us to Him. And He calls us to come to Him through complete humility, confident trust, and into consummate glory. Well, let's start with the call to humility, and that's in verses 5 through 6. You younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders, and all of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. For God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you at the proper time. So coming out of his instructions that we looked at in the previous two lessons about elders and the elders being serving within godly boundaries and with godly attitudes, Peter flows into a discussion of the need for submission and humility by starting with the idea of younger men submitting to the older men. And this raises the question here, is this a request for us to submit to our elders, men who are in an official position of authority appointed by the church, or just to elderly men in general and to the elderly in general? And the answer is yes. Okay, now you're wondering, like, well, wait a minute. Yes to both, actually. The answer isn't clear because he used one, talking about elders there in verses 1 through 4, to lead to a discussion of the elderly and beginning here in verse 5. Using words that have both a general and a specific meaning, Peter returns to one of his favorite words in the book, and that is the word submit. This word submit is very key to our understanding of the book and of what Peter is calling on us to do as followers of Christ. Back in chapter 2 and 3, he repeatedly called on us to submit as citizens, servants, and spouses, and the idea is rank under, get in line with the level of authority that we are under, and respect that and submit to it and follow those line of authority and power. And this is a voluntary submission. This is something we must be willing to subject ourselves to one another. Let's go back to the text there in verse 5. You younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders. And that could be official or unofficial. And all of you, so it didn't just refer to the younger men, but to everyone, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. So it's a submission to one another. And there's a reason Peter has to keep coming back to this idea about humility and about submission. And the reason he has to keep coming back to it is that pride is a problem for us all. In fact, let me repeat that. Pride is a problem for us all. And I can promise you, I know that at least about myself because I see a guy every day when I shave that it struggles with pride. And so all of us, I think, struggle with it to some degree or another. Now, it may not come out in domineering determination to control others by dictating to them. You know, not everybody goes around just trying to bark orders and tell everybody what to do. Some do. And this is something I think that preachers, elders, and teachers have to really fight because it's easy to fall into that when you get into a position of authority. I've said it many times that I think one of the problems coming out of 2020 and the COVID restrictions was that a lot of elders in a lot of places across the country decided it was just time to assert their authority and prove themselves to be in charge to tell everybody what to do. And that's just not the way it's supposed to be. And preachers fall for this all the time as well, especially the successful, popular preachers. And I wish I could say that that's my problem, but I know it's not. I'm just full of pride anyway, even though I'm not popular. Doesn't matter. Because what happens is preachers who get the calls for meetings and get the calls for all of the recognition and honor from all of the brethren and from brethren all over the place, they begin to think, but not just them, any of us can, begin to think that the size of the congregation or their success or the fact that people really think a lot of them begins to get into their minds and seep in there, and they don't even realize it sometimes, many times. And that they think that their success or their popularity is proof of their success, and their success is proof of God's approval and approval of their work, and then by extension, God's divine approval of themselves. And so it comes around, and instead of being about the success of the gospel and the lives and hearts of people, it's God's approval of themselves. And this is a problem that has to be watched out for. And it's not just preachers. It can be any member. It can be any Bible teacher. It can be any person. Now, going back to these popular preachers, sometimes they openly boast. And I've seen some of this, and some openly boast about the numbers coming where they preach. And while outwardly attributing it to the Lord, it's just often just humble bragging. Because in their minds, the real star is themselves. They're the draw. They're the reason people come. And that does happen in a lot of places, in a lot of cases. Not so much among the Lord's people, but in the religious world. By the way, I watched a video the other day on describing how these mega churches are struggling, especially in the years, even if this far after COVID, that they're just the members haven't come back. And these multi-million dollar facilities are just designed to seat 5, 10, 20,000 people, have 500, 200 people coming because the people just have quit going to the mega churches because And especially after the preacher, the one who made it grow, either got caught doing something he shouldn't be doing or died, and the churches dwindle away to nothing because it was built around personality. The Lord's church is built around one personality, and that is the Lord. So people aren't, seats are not in the seats because of the preacher. They better be there because of the gospel. And the preachers better understand that. Now others are a little more subtle. They're a little more subtle because they want to work to manipulate people from the background. They want to pull people's strings and make them dance to their tune. Or, and I think this is something that all of us can be subject to, we should get mad when people don't do what we want them to do. We have an idea of the way things ought to be run or the way things ought to be done, and when it's not done the way we want and the way we think, we get mad about it. It can happen to any of us, and that's not something that Peter is saying is not acceptable in the Lord's church among the people of God. And it's difficult for us because we think of ourselves often too highly of ourselves and too lowly of others, and we have to flip that script. We have to flip that thinking in our mind. We must put on the slave's apron. Going back to verse 5. In verse 5 he says, "You younger men likewise be subject to your elders, and all of you clothe yourselves with humility toward one another." That word clothe is a word describing a slave's apron. The lowest, most insignificant person, the servant of all, he says, put that on. Put on the slave's clothing. That's a requirement. That's a difficult thing, isn't it? Because all of us think that we're pretty special. And you are all, by the way, very special as far as I'm concerned, but we have to have the mentality that you're special, not me. And that's the way our thinking has to be, and be willing to put on that slave's apron. And that's why he quotes there in chapter 5, verse 5, from Proverbs 3, verse 34, "God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble." So God doesn't want to have anything to do with proud people other than to break their pride and drive them to their knees before Him. We have to be willing to do that, have to be willing to submit to Him. And then Matthew chapter 5, verse 3, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago in class, in the Sermon on the Mount, "Blessed are the poor," what? "In spirit." That means they're not filled with pride. And it's a job, it's a struggle, it's an obligation, though, on our part to fight through the desire to be filled with pride, put on the slave's apron, and serve, submit to others. Not easy to do, but something that he is requiring. Well, the next thing that he points out here in the text is confident trust from verses 7 through 9. Let's continue our reading of 1 Peter chapter 5. "Casting all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But resist him firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world." This is the idea he's getting here of being ready to fight, and know that the world's coming after you. So you put your faith in God. You put your trust in Him. You know, at the end of the song, "Lean on Me," there's this final line that says, "If there's a load you have to bear that you can't carry, I'm right up the road. I'll share your load if you just call me." And so that's what God is saying here in verse 7, or Peter's saying here, that God calls on us to cast all our anxiety on Him. Call on Him to carry our load. Call on Him to assist us, to aid us, to keep us going when we face the difficulties and trials of life. Yeah, I think that the songwriter almost had to be aware of 1 Peter 5, 7 when he wrote this song. Maybe not, but it seems like it. It seems like the thinking there, the mentality's there. Peter pulls this idea from Psalm 52, and verse 55 and verse 22. Turn to the book of Psalms, if you will. In Psalm 55, verse 22, David writing about a time when his friend not only turned his back on him, but turned against him. And like a lion attacked from the shadow, and he's calling on God for deliverance. In Psalm 55, verse 22, we read this. Cast your burden. Well, let's back up, get the setting here. He's talking about his friend. He's calling on God to redeem his soul in peace from the battle which is against me, and for they are many who strive with me. God will hear and answer them. Even the one who sits enthroned from of old, with whom there is no change, and who do not fear God, he has put forth his hand against those who were at peace with him. He has violated his covenant. His speech was smoother than butter, but his heart was war. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. So he's describing the person who has betrayed him, and there's shades of references here to the idea of Judas betraying Christ. But in verse 22, he says, cast your burden upon the Lord, upon Yahweh, and He will sustain you. He will never allow the righteous to be shaken. So he's saying here, let our Lord, our caring God, carry us through when we are attacked, when we are assaulted, when our friends turn their back on us or turn on us and bring persecution or pain in our lives. The Lord will watch out for us. The Lord, the caring God will carry us through. And so we need to give our concerns, our worries, our burdens to God and let Him carry them because He cares about us. Now, think about that for a moment. The God who created the world is interested in you and the things of your life and the things that worry you. You ever thought about the fact that this is the God that we serve? That's why He's a caring God. He worries about you. He cares about you when you're worried about your kids and what's going to happen with your kids and how they're going to grow up and those kind of things, or with work or with family or with older parents and those kind of things. God is right there with you, offering to carry that load for you. He recognizes your struggle and cares about you. That's the kind of God we serve. In fact, it's interesting, you go back to 1 Peter chapter 5, that word there, cares, it kind of has a hint there of kind of an anxiety for us. He says, put your anxiety on Him because He's anxious for you. He is thinking about you. He's concerned about you. And His greatest, and like the description of love in 1 Corinthians 13, you know, they're all verbs. His caring for you is a verb. It's something active. It's not a sentiment. It's not a mentality, but a mentality in practice. God acts on His concern for us, and He did it by sending Jesus to die on the cross for us, who calls us to seek rest in Him. Matthew 11:28, come unto you, all you who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He's calling on us to come to Him for rest. So through Him, through Christ, we can resist temptations and trials as Satan attacks us through the world. Now, fortunately, we don't face the physical threats that many others face. I was listening to a sermon the other day online, and a guy was talking about all of the places in the world in the last few years where everywhere you turn, people who claim to follow Christ are being killed because they claim to follow Christ. They declare their faith in Christ, and people arrest them, throw them in jail, and often kill them. We don't have to worry about that. Not here. But what we do have are concerns. We have worries. We have things that test us. And God is saying, put our faith in Him. And then this gets the idea of standing strong. Go back to the text there in verse 9. But resist Him firm in your faith. That's the confident trust. Firm in your faith. Knowing that even if the whole world turns against us, God is with us. And God will help us. And not only is God able to help us, we are encouraged by the fact here that also our brethren have been through this, and others are suffering with this. So we can know that others go through this. We can go through this, whatever suffering it may be. And we can trust in God to carry us, because He carries us. We are not alone. Always remember that. And finally, the last thing here is the idea of a caring God calls us to Himself in consummate glory. And this is verses 10 and 11. Let's read the text again here. Verse 10 says, "For after you have suffered for a little while, the God of all grace, who called you to His eternal glory in Christ, will Himself," and notice what He's going to do, "perfect, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. To Him be dominion forever and ever." So God will not leave us to suffer alone and for nothing, but He allows us to suffer for perfection, to perfect us, to prepare us for eternal glory in Jesus, getting us ready for our home in heaven. As we go through the trials and tribulations of this world, always remember that God's allowing them for the singular purpose of perfecting us, preparing us, shaping us to fit His glory. We are being made ready to be with Him. And the other words there are confirm, and the word confirm means to fix firmly in place. And it's interesting, confirm in the text here, and in your versions may have different words for it, and because they all have different different translations of it. But confirm means to fix firmly in place. You know, you watch football and you watch the defensive line. They get fixed firmly in place and they won't let the offense push them back. That's the idea there of confirm. But on the other hand, strengthen, the word translated strengthen, at least in the New American Standard Version in 1995 that I'm reading from, it's the idea of being given the power to move. So you're stable and unmovable, but you have the ability, the power to move, that you're not paralyzed by fear. We can act on His behalf, sort of like we talked about this morning in our sermon this morning from the being made in the image of God. And then the last word there is establish. Going back to the settled and not moving. Grounded on the foundation stone is the idea there. Look back in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verses 4 through 7. We see the idea that Peter's drawing from. Verse 4, he says, "And coming to Him as to a living stone which has been rejected by men, but is choice and precious in the sight of God, you also as living stones are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For this is contained in Scripture. Behold, I lay in Zion a choice stone, a precious cornerstone, and he who believes in Him will not be disappointed. This precious value then is for you who believe, but for those who believe, the stone which the builders rejected, this became the very cornerstone." And so Peter is reaching back to that, those quotes from the Old Testament, and reaching back to the passage that he wrote earlier, and saying that God will establish us. That's what we have, a caring God who will establish us. Give us a solid foundation so that we're not shaken. So we have a caring God who acts on our behalf to do all of this. And to call us to come to Him to share in His eternal glory and dominion. We can have this with Him. And so as we wrap up tonight, we'll think about it from this standpoint. We have a caring God who is calling us because He wants to exalt us at the proper time. He's getting us ready for a home with Him. That's the kind of God we serve. He hasn't forgotten about us. He's not just slapping us around for the fun of it. He's allowing us to go through life, making the choices that we make, and going through the trials and tribulations to prepare us for the day that we will be with Him and with His Son, who suffered the humiliation of death on the cross for us. Now, we don't know when the proper time will be. We don't know when we will be called to glory. It may be after this life is over. It may not be during our lifetime that the Lord will come again. But at some point, all of us will give an account, stand before God and give an account for our choice to serve Him. And a caring God calls us. He says, come to me. So tonight, as we think about these things, the fact that we serve this wonderful, caring God, He says, come. The question is, will you? And we ask, what will your answer be when God says, come? I hope your answer will be, I'm coming right now to serve you. Please do while we stand and sing.